Welcome to the Guff Men. I'm Alex, and with me today is James and a special guest. But before we get to our special guest and today's topic, check out our website, themcguffinmen.com. I've got a lot of good, interesting content that we've put out recently. James and I, the last two podcasts we did were about Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and World Wrestling Entertainment. So check those out if you are interested in those. And also I wrote a thing about Noah, about, well, the movie. Anyway, on songsandcigarettes.com, so you can check that out. Also follow us on Twitter, at the MacGuffin Men. Anyway, let's get to the theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
All right. We would like to welcome our special guest to the podcast, Emily. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yay.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, I think you were the first person to get applause on the podcast. So.
Wow.
It's episode 170. Episode 170, and we finally did it. So what are we talking about here today, either of you?
Emily?
We are talking about the greatest movie ever made. Mean Girls.
Oh, yeah. You didn't really have to say it after that description. Yeah, this is a movie Alex and I talked about doing for a long time. And it is very good timing because it's in the news now.
How is it in the news?
Well, we're, depending on when this comes out, we are either a week or a day away from the 10th anniversary of this movie.
Oh, yes, yes.
And Daniel Franzese, I'm going to say, the actor who played Damien, just came out of the closet publicly.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of making its rounds. Not necessarily breaking news, but yeah, I've just seen a lot of people. This movie has come back on people's radar again. Not that it ever really left, right?
Yeah, this movie has not left our generation's radar, I don't think. It's very present, you know? I don't know. I'm always surprised by the type of person I can say the word fetch around and they understand what I mean. Yeah.
I think that maybe a solid 30% of Tumblr is Mean Girls.
And then like that, I don't think that's an exaggeration. I think if we did some hard research and crunched some numbers, the mathletes would come up with Emily being correct.
Yeah. I'm starting a petition to change the title of this movie to Meme Girls because it's popularity on the internet.
Exactly.
No, I do want to talk more about that later because, yes, this movie does have quite a legacy and, as you said, kind of never really went away even 10 years after the fact that 10 years after its release.
Yeah.
How are you guys going to celebrate the 10th anniversary?
I think I've been celebrating it all week by watching it repeatedly and thinking about it all day. And so I think I just got my celebrations out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching it at work to prepare for this podcast, even though I don't really need to watch it any more times. Yeah. I already know it off by heart, obviously. So that was a pretty good celebration for me. I usually don't watch movies at work. So
yeah.
I don't have one of those jobs.
Thanks, Emily. And James, how are you going to celebrate?
Well, the like to the day, the 10th anniversary is on a Wednesday, so obviously we wear pink. That's a given. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I would have watched it again, but I just watched it today, so yeah. I think I'm covered.
Yeah.
But I will just spend more time on the internet than usual, bathing in the Mean Girls references.
Yeah. I think I'm more interested to know how the White House Twitter account will respond to its 10-year anniversary.
Okay, well, I guess we can start by actually talking about the contents of this movie, maybe?
Sure, let's do it. So are we acting them out? Which characters am I playing? Because I can do it all from memory.
The one that can who can recite all the dialogue in less than 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, this movie's very good.
Yep.
Shall I start?
Sure.
It's super funny. Like incredibly funny. I know I like teen movies more than most people that have ever existed, but
and you like Tina Fey movies more than most people.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think the latter statement can definitely be said about Emily as well. But yeah, I think this is really, it works as like a really funny comedy first, and then the teen movie stuff is secondary. Like, I saw this movie 7 times in theaters. I would not have seen it that many times if it wasn't super funny. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of times.
Yeah, it's a long story, but it's, trust me, that we're in the double digits with movies I've seen 7 times. So it's fine.
Okay.
It's in a good group, though, I promise.
Yeah, but so yeah, as I said, Tina Fey wrote this. I guess we should mention it was based on a book by Rosalind Wiseman called Queen Bees and Wannabes.
That's correct.
A nonfiction, like, parent helping book.
Yeah.
To try to get the parents of daughters a bit of a heads up of what they're getting into in high school and how the cliques work and just how rough people can be on each other and why. And Tina Fey, I guess, thought she could turn this into a narrative. And as I said, the book is very just, you know, nonfiction, straightforward kind of self-help advice kind of stuff. So she, I guess, added a lot of stuff from her own high school experience and kind of the world that she sees as it is now, and came up with the whole Katie being a formerly homeschooled student coming to America and, you know, real high schools for the first time. And with the whole kind of zoological aspect, like her parents being animal researchers, it has a very, like, anthropological approach.
Yeah, for sure.
like right off the get-go. She recurring throughout the movie as well, but constantly comparing it to like a high school to a jungle, and, you know, the mall is a watering hole. And so it's not completely devoid of kind of that nonfiction element. We really do kind of get exposed to it as like a kind of like a scientific experiment. But
yeah, yes. Exactly. It's like she used to live in Africa, but now she's going to the jungle type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Basically how the movie is set up. And it is not particularly subtle with these things.
Oh, no, not at all.
But it's a nice thing. And it's, I don't know, there's always, it's always nice to see a teen movie that tries something like that, even though you kind of have to be kind of over, you know, pretty surface level stuff for the type of movie that you're selling and making. Yeah.
Yeah, it just makes it feel a little different and comes off as kind of like a PSA education.
Yeah.
One, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, for sure.
I get kind of like a Goodfellas approach off the beginning, too.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of narration in the movie. One of the things I love about the narration in the movie is when she's like in the middle of a scene having a conversation and says something and then says something in narration and then says something and then says something in narration. I love that. Like when the part where Aaron's talking to her about a math problem, she's like, wrong. You're so wrong. Like, I think that part's great. And I think, I don't know. I think you're kind of like this too, James, where you hear narration and you kind of, you're like, well, maybe this is a lazy choice. And I think it helps the movie for sure.
Yeah, no, exactly. Just kind of those things I was describing about it being kind of educational in a way that really comes off, but it's still fun and goofy. And those things you said about kind of those different conversations she's having at the same time. Yeah, it actually adds something. So I'm totally fine with this. And as you said, they try something else and it really works for the subject matter. So I'm 100% okay with it. Mm-hmm. Emily, you still with us?
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Okay, good. So yeah, we've got Katie, mm-hmm. our girl Lilo.
Yeah.
And Rachel McAdams, I guess, breakout role.
Yes. Assuming we are not counting the animal, yes, this is definitely a breakout role. And like this, I mean, this movie came out 2 months before The Notebook hit theaters as well. So she had a big spring to early summer 2004.
Right. Yeah. And then, well, she plays Regina George, I should say, Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
And for those of us not up on our Latin, Regina does mean queen. So she is the queen bee referenced. And then we got Gretchen and Karen to round out the plastics for us.
Yep.
What do you make of the different roles kind of within the plastics? Like we have Regina on top. Do you think about kind of any rankings beyond that or what Gretchen and Karen kind of represent in this group or any differences between them?
I suppose. Yeah. I haven't thought a lot about it, but I'll let Emily go.
I mean, I haven't thought a ton about it, but I mean, Karen, I think Karen was almost like, well, I guess we'll have one dumb girl that can say dumb girl jokes. Yeah. But then it ended up being pretty funny because Amanda Seyfried was really good at that bit, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
But Lacey Chabert is so funny as Gretchen. Yeah. Every time I watch this movie, I can't get over how funny she is and how she never got to do this again.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Her comedic timing is brilliant every time she has, you know, to say. And I don't know. I can't get over how she's now just kind of like doing TV movies.
Yeah.
No, sad. I
know. I mean, she was on Party of Five, and I think that was a pretty long-running show, so I bet she's super set financially. But I think going back to her having great timing, the part, like right off the bat at the beginning where she's like, you think you might like a boy, but you could be wrong. Like the way she says you could be wrong is so like just a little bit off and so, so funny. And I think she's great in this movie for sure.
Yeah, because Karen just gets – you know, all the dumb blonde stuff, and
she gets the Karen has the worst jokes, I think.
Yeah, but it still
all throughout the movie
makes them very funny.
Yeah, and when when she's talking about the vest that she wasn't allowed to wear, I think she kills that part. I think it's great.
Yeah, and then I mean, so that's Karen's gig. Regina, as we covered, is kind of the cold, calculating one on top, but Gretchen is just in panic mode for 90% of this movie. Like, yeah. There is just so much going on, just really high energy, like really funny, but there's just so much going on underneath the surface, which is obviously a lot different than Karen, but she's just panicked and freaking out kind of for this whole movie. And to keep up that energy without being just grating, I think would be difficult to do, but I think she absolutely kills it.
Yeah, exactly. And she thinks she's found herself in this sort of rarefied space, and she's desperate to hold on to it, you know?
Yeah.
That's sort of what drives that fear all through the movie.
Yeah, and it seems like she isn't trying to replace Regina, but would like to, whereas Karen is just kind of coasting at the bottom and kind of just occupying space. how much do we hate Regina George? Is she as bad as they say she is?
Well, one thing that I really enjoyed about this movie, watching it again, aside from the fact that I could pick up new things to enjoy about this movie while watching it again, is that like the Aaron Samuels line right before he finds out Regina's been cheating on him. He's having the chat with Katie, and he says something along the lines of like, there's good and bad in everybody. She's just more upfront about it. And I like that he's conscious of the fact that she's kind of a shitty person and likes her because she's at least okay with that. I mean, his opinion changes about 5 seconds later when he finds out that she's been lying to him. But as long as, like in Aaron Samuel's eyes, as long as she's honest about being shitty, he's okay with it. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing about the movie that I hadn't noticed before, and kind of how I feel about, you know, to an extent, how people live their lives, you know? Like, if you know you're shitty, it makes it easier for me to be okay with your shittiness, you know?
Yeah, and kind of Janice Ian even says something pretty similar to that, that her big problem with Katie is that she pretends to be nice and innocent, and I'm from Africa with the little birds. yeah, but she kind of calls these people are kind of upfront about being assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Regina does use her powers for good at one point, because her whole introduction, well, not her introduction, but her meeting with Katie is basically saving her from sexual harassment and embarrassment in the cafeteria. Yeah.
That's true. I think that the only thing about Regina that I don't find believable is that at the end she would go play sports and like be nice and fine.
Well, yeah, I mean, the last 5 minutes of this movie is very, it's got a very pretty bow on it that I don't think totally fits, but the first 85 minutes of the movie are so goddamn good that I'm fine with it. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think part of me wants to see Mean Girls, the alternate ending where like everything stays exactly the same.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens in high school.
Yeah.
People that are nice don't just, you know, I don't know, people that are mean don't just stop being mean because there's no point.
Like we all learn together in the assembly, and okay, most of us are going to ignore those lessons, you know.
Tina Fey taught us all how to be nice to other women, and now we're just all magically nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what do you make of Tina Fey giving herself the savior role?
I mean, I guess I understand why she did it, because she obviously had some motives behind making this movie and getting some of her points across, but I don't know. I think that's the only thing I don't like about the movie, is that at the end it wraps up so nicely and everyone learns a lesson. Cause I think that's, I don't know. It would be funnier if they didn't.
Yeah, for sure. How do you feel like specifically about the, cause there are parts that of the wrap up that I enjoy. Like I like her scene where she's making fun of the girl with the 99-cent lip gloss on her snaggletooth, and then she's sort of realizing the problems in doing that and that she's going to lose because of doing that. I think that scene works. It sort of ties up the themes in a movie that without going over the top with it, and without putting too neat of a bow on it, you know. But I was curious to know, Emily, what you think about the part where, and this is in the assembly, where Ms. Norbury says, you've all got to stop calling each other sluts and whores. It just makes it okay for guys to call you sluts and whores, which is something Tina Fey would say in anything Tina Fey's ever been in.
Yeah.
And I mean, not that she plays drastically different characters, you know, with the exception of maybe Blurta on SNL. But I don't know. I was curious to know your opinion on that, Emily.
I think it's good that she threw something so blatant, like that kind of a blatant message in. Mm-hmm. And I think 10 years ago, that was a really different thing to say in a teen movie than it might be today.
Yep,
that probably changed what, you know, we consider an acceptable amount of overt feminism in something that is so, like, you know, something that everybody's seen. And, yeah, I don't know. I guess I it's so Tina Fey that I'm just like, of course she would say that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think, I probably didn't put much thought into it when the movie came out. This is sort of the first like real exposure I have to Tina Fey's writing voice. You know, this is pre 30 Rock. And I just didn't know that was the Tina Fey thing yet, because I think this movie really defines the Tina Fey thing, you know, because she could only do so much on SNL. I think now if this movie were to come out like in 2014 and that line would be in there, I feel like it would be a lot more problematic because we know more about Tina Fey. But yes, I agree with everything you say, and I think it does kind of add a message to the movie that is interesting. And also it helps that there's, I don't know, half unclean language in it as well. But yeah, it's a good button on that scene, I suppose.
I don't want to hate on Tina Fey and anything she may have said in any interviews. I'm trying to keep any of my, cause I love Tina Fey, but then I also have things that I don't like about Tina Fey, but I'm trying to, you know, be unbiased.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of in the same spot as you, or at least I am sometimes. But and there's other stuff in the movie that I think the Tina Fey element really, really helps with, these kind of tiny jokes, like Regina's little sister watching the Khalees milkshake video and dancing along with it. I think is so funny, and then later when she's watching Spring Beach Party or whatever the version of Girls Gone Wild is that they went with. But yeah. Good times.
Yeah, see, I really have a problem with that line.
Okay.
Not the sentiment of it. I can fully agree with it. It just doesn't seem organic to the narrative, and you guys kind of seem like that's what you like about it, is that kind of she threw something in that's not necessarily relevant, and I don't know how we gain from that. Like the plastics problem doesn't seem to be that. It doesn't seem to be what they're doing is making men or adults or other people think less of them. Like, I think that they have problems in the way that they treat each other. And it's definitely true that, you know, guys are part of this problem because of, you know, we saw how Aaron Samuels or them liking Aaron kind of causes them to do shitty things to each other and sabotage each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. To me, that just seems like, it's just not organic and not really solving the problem that seems to be what has been bugging.
Okay. Well, I think one of the big things about the movie is the idea that there are a set of unwritten rules in all groups within the plastics, within, I don't know, the Asian hotties or whatever. Like there's a set of unwritten rules, like the Halloween slut rules rule is a good example, or Regina saying, I really want to lose 3 pounds, and then pausing and waiting for Karen and Gretchen to say, oh my God, you're so skinny or whatever. You know, like yeah. There are just these things that you never, like you can't even imagine Regina saying, hey, if I say I want to lose 3 pounds, you have to tell me I'm skinny, you know? And every friend group has these things that you just don't talk about, or that if somebody says something that it has to trigger this reaction to you. And I think what's interesting about the Miss Norbury line is that she kind of explains an unwritten rule that people probably that are listening to it don't think about, you know, and that's kind of what I like about it. And I think it does tie into the narrative, because I think the whole story of the plastics is about navigating rules you're unsure about. And the reason that you're unsure about them is because nobody ever tells you what the rules are in high school. They're all sort of things you have to feel out. And I don't think it I think it helps the narrative for sure.
Okay. Well, yeah, and all those rules that you're talking about, I think, are the kinds of rules that would have caused the author of the source material to write that book. It was like, here's all the things that are really happening that people don't necessarily talk about, but your daughter is going to be very much affected by these. So here's a big heads up on, you know, you might never hear it said explicitly, this, and this, but it's very well understood between, you know, your daughter's group of friends that this is, you know, these are the rules. These are the laws of the jungle, so to speak, you know? Yeah. Is there a male version of this movie? Or is that not necessary?
I don't know, because I feel like this is a type of movie that if it was made for males, if it was pitched for males, like Mean Girls for males, it would never get greenlit, you know?
Why not?
Because, this movie was sold with an all-pink poster. Like, it was sold exclusively to girls, and it just happened to be good enough that guys accepted it, you know, because it's a good movie. And I suppose I haven't thought about it, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
No, I can't either. And so many of the teen movies around this time, like all I can think about right now is like John Tucker Must Die. Mm-hmm. And they're all very female oriented casts with, you know, dealing with what they would think of as being like, you know, girls, teen girl problems.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And it's just a group of movies that has always, or at least as long as we've been old enough to remember marketing for these movies, has always kind of been sold to the young female demographic.
Yeah. And when I say a male version, I don't mean males can't enjoy this movie, because, you know, Alex and I clearly do. And as you said, it was just good enough that, like, I remember my sister really liked this movie, and then, you know, she told me to watch it. And then hearing a lot of other guys saying like, oh, no, like it's a girl movie, but like it's still really funny. Like it kind of always like had that caveat that it was, you know, it's very female centric, female writer, female stars.
Pink cover,
pink everything. But that it is still just a very kind of funny, interesting movie. And yeah, as Emily said, these are seen as traditionally female problems. You know, I think that there could be a guide for a guy going to high school. I think it could be overwhelming in a lot of the same ways. But I think a lot of these problems of body image and cleavage is more female-centric problems.
Yeah.
I feel like the closest thing I can think of is Freaks and Geeks.
That's what I was thinking of, too.
You know? Oh, shit.
and that's only the geeks half of things, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. And it's funny, actually, because there's that one really good episode of Freaks and Geeks where the new girl, I think she's from Florida, comes to the Freaks and Geeks school, and I think McKinley High, and she sort of becomes friends with Sam and Haverchuck and Neil. And it's just like they're just trying so hard to keep her away from Vicky. Joanna Garcia's character is basically the Regina George type of character in Freaks and Geeks. And the whole episode is about them trying to befriend her before she can meet up with Vicky. And eventually, like, Vicky takes her into her crew. And I think that's kind of the best example of this that we've got for male-centric, you know?
Okay. Alex, you and I kind of talked through text a little bit earlier while planning a time to meet up to do this. And you mentioned something that they changed from the R-rated version to the PG-13 version.
Yes.
Do you want to share some
lots
of those changes?
Things.
Yeah, no, lots
of things.
If Emily, if you're knowledgeable on this subject, which I guess I should have assumed you are because it was Mean Girls related, what were some of those changes? Because I had not heard about those till this week and was
can
very
Can I tell you my favorite
of
one?
Please
of course
do.
You can.
Okay, so my favorite one is that the rap was supposed to have a line, the rap that Kevin Napoor does, obviously, was supposed to have the line, all the ninth grade girls want to suck my what? Which they had to cut the day before they shot it. But yeah, would have been pretty great.
I had not heard that one.
my favorite one is the it's towards the end where Regina George shows Tim Meadows' character the burn book, and I forget whose name it was, but Regina says, "You know this," Tim Meadows says, "This person is," and Regina cuts him off and says, "Fat whore," and it was originally written and filmed. Like you can see, it's very obviously ADR'd. This person has, and then Rachel McAdams cuts him off and says, "Vag odor," which I find super funny. But yeah,
oh, that's good.
Yeah, but there's I remember the buttering of the muffin is the popping of the cherry in the original script. But that's the only other one I remember off the top of my head.
Oh,
and sorry.
Yeah. Made out with a hot dog was masturbated with a hot dog.
Yeah.
Which is,
I believe, think a very specifically frozen hot dog.
I think that's a very persistent high school rumor. Like, I remember hearing that of someone in my school. And, like, I think it's even on Snopes that, like, it's such a common urban legend that someone in a high school in your town masturbated with a frozen hot dog and it broke off. So I was very entertained to see that change was made.
Yeah.
I do love how a lot of those changes made the joke funnier because they didn't make any sense. Like, is your muffin buttered? And like, it's funnier because everyone has to think like, wait, is that a thing that I don't know?
Yeah,
or
I
is
know.
That just funny?
It's great.
Oh, and even just make out with a hot dog. Like, what is
that? That was one time.
That's pretty wonderful. You heard that, speaking of the original versions of this movie, Lindsay Lohan was going to be Regina George at a point?
Yeah.
If that happened, would Lindsay Lohan's kind of last decades fall from grace be more cathartic for some people? Like, to see that the worst girl in your high school kind of peaked in high school and now her life went to shit and drug abuse?
I don't think it would have been cathartic. I think it would have still been received as basically the same.
Yeah, whether she was the good person or the bad person in this?
Yeah. I know my feeling wouldn't be any different.
But you probably didn't get bullied by girls like Regina George that much.
That's probably true.
Regina, Rachel McAdams just plays her as such a, I don't know, it's so over the top, especially since she wears the wig and everything. Like, she's such a, I don't know. She's not like a real person.
Yeah.
She's an evil Barbie. And I think it would have been very different if Lindsay Lohan played it. I think it would have been a lot, I don't know, more aggressive and meaner in a way if she had have played it. Mm-hmm. But I can't really imagine it, to be honest with you, just because I'm so used to her being Kathy Heron, the sweet girl from Africa.
Yeah, I think we'd kind of need to know who would replace her as Katie, I think, to kind of understand the dynamic of the movie. You know?
Right. Yeah. If they just switch places.
Well, then I think the movie would have to be way more Regina-centric, so it would definitely change the movie a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rewatching this, I was pleasantly reminded that this movie ends with a freeze frame, Alex.
Yeah, and it's a horrible freeze frame, too. It's
even for a freeze frame, it's pretty bad.
Like, it's not that hard to find a good freeze frame of Lindsay Lohan, and they somehow end the movie on one. And I don't know, like, I think there's some good moments in the direction of this movie, but yeah, it's very, very utilitarian for the most part. And yeah, that I hated, and it's very clear there are parts that they shot in slow motion and then were deciding and editing whether or not to use it in slow motion. Like, you can see the difference in the shutter speed, things look a little choppier, and that bothers me now. It certainly didn't bother me at the time, but yeah, there's some directing no-nos in this movie that really bother me. But there are some moments that I really like directing wise, but yeah, it's more fun to shit on things.
Okay.
Her eating lunch alone in the bathroom at the very beginning, I think, is a nice moment.
Yeah, when it zooms right through the door.
Yeah, I think that's and the way the score plays at that time, I think that's good. And the Ashton Kutcher joke that's all in one wide shot, I think, is really good. But yeah, anyways, there's a couple good things for you. Shout outs to Mark Waters.
We know you're a fan, Mark.
After a four-part Just Like Heaven podcast, he's listened to everything.
Well, speaking of the ending, I have another question for you. Mm-hmm. Do you think that any of the kind of positive messages we've been talking about are undone at all by the ending?
Emily?
I can make it more specific if you need.
Yeah, okay. That would be helpful.
The last sequence, we get everyone paired up at the dance, except Damien, but kind of everyone is in their, you know, romantic / sexual relationships. It just seems that shouldn't be necessary. Like, it seems like romance and sexuality being necessary for your happiness is kind of a non-Tina Fey thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if that kind of struck you as inconsistent with a lot of the other messages or things you've heard her say outside of this movie in her career.
Well, I mean, we've kind of talked about it a bit. The last 5 minutes kind of exists so that we can have the first 85, you know? And yeah, there's a lot of problems in the last few minutes, but it's just kind of part of the reality of making a movie, you know, and having to be able to sell that movie to a particular audience, you know? So.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's part of the end that I find, you know, it would be a lot more interesting if they didn't make everyone pair off at the end. Although I did like Kevin and Janice.
Yeah.
Getting together. I think that's worth it personally, because they're so opposite and they're in such different cliques, and they, I don't know, it just completely changes the characters, especially Janice, to think that she would like be like, okay, yeah, I'm into this math geek, whatever.
And Kevin usually goes to the Great Niners, as we just learned. So.
And the joke that we get with them is actually funny, I think, which helps, like the "you Puerto Rican." She says Lebanese. Like, that's funny.
Yeah. What do you make of the Damien-Janice kiss?
I don't know.
As someone that kissed my gay best friend, I think it's pretty – I think it probably would have happened before that dance, to be honest with you. That if it was going to happen with Janice and Damien, they would have tried it before.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was funny. It was not completely unbelievable as I say from personal experience.
And it's fun that it kind of toys with, I mean, what you are just asking us if we have a problem with, the idea of everybody pairing up, you know?
Yeah.
It's like not everybody pairs up.
Well, yeah, as you said, like you're saying, you kind of forgive a lot of the stuff in the last 5 minutes just to put a bow on it. If he went straight just to have everyone pair off perfectly, I would have been very upset.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the one thing that doesn't really wrap up perfectly is there's another generation of plastics. Like, there's the younger version.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been way too much to be like, look, no more plastics, no more cliques. Like,
we solved the problem.
We did it, guys.
Everything is permanently fixed.
Yeah. Like, we still see Gretchen just join another clique instead of plastics. It just seems like the worst of the worst is gone, and now everyone's going to go – to a lesser of two evils kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like they just had to do that, though, so that it didn't seem like completely rainbow sunshine happy school.
Is that not the name of their high school? Yeah, I thought they changed the name of the school and everything.
I'm pretty sure that is the real name of the school in Etobicoke. Okay. I'm pretty sure.
We're going deep with the trivia.
Yeah.
It was just like, do you thought that we made a perfect ending for this movie? Think again. The young kids are still plastic.
They still fix their hair after they almost get hit by a bus.
Sequel.
Well, yeah.
Well.
That does exist, but I don't think any of us has seen it.
No.
Not even you, Emily?
No.
Wow.
It just, I don't know why I would watch it.
Yeah. Like, if it looked good, then I would have watched it. I wouldn't have been like, the mere existence of the sequel is a pox on humanity, you know? It's just, like, the trailer is bad. You know, it's clearly one of those movies that exists only to get the money because you liked Mean Girls, you know? So.
But Tim Meadows is in it.
He's in The Ladies Man, too, and I didn't like that movie very much.
There's a Ladies Man, too?
Oh, great. Great work. What a wonderful, clever bit.
Well, I guess we could talk about the non-direct-to-DVD sequel legacy of this movie. Like, as we touched on earlier, this is still all over the internet. Like, cult classic, quotable. Like, I remember this being quoted so much around the time it came out. It just never went away.
Yeah.
What is it? Like... movie, but is there nothing more than that? Why it make like why it's so quotable, and especially why it's so memeable?
Well, I think part of it is that it's kind of like it does kind of catch you off guard. I think a very, very small percentage of people that watch this movie for the first time expect it to be as funny as it is, which kind of makes it more funny. And there's a lot of like really good throwaway lines that there's a lot to pick up on. And I mean, her favorite movie is Varsity Blues. That's like the 300th funniest joke in this movie. And it's still really funny. And I don't know. It's just kind of, it's something that I think is really present in the way Tina Fey writes. And this is very, very much a part of 30 Rock. And I mean, SNL is basically built around this idea that the scripts are like joke machines. You need to have as many laughs in there as possible. And, you know, some things just don't work. And, but the problem is never going to be that they didn't try enough jokes, you know? And, like, I think there are some just bad jokes in this movie, but it's like 1%, you know? And it's the same with 30 Rock. Every once in a while, they would just have the worst joke. And, but it was so, so okay because the 20 that came before it were just so, so great. And so like quick hitting, and you want to kind of see it again because you know how many jokes there are, and you want to be prepared for the ones you know you like and just want to hear again.
Yeah. When you're saying the way treating it kind of like SNL or 30 Rock, just getting as many jokes in there as you can. The scene where Damien's in the girls' washroom, Danny DeVito, I love your work, which is a hilarious line to me.
Yeah.
You know, it strikes me as a writer saying like, oh, we can't have Damien in here in this scene. It's the girls' washroom.
Yeah.
And someone saying like, well, we'll address it and then kind of just knock it down with the good joke really quickly and it's fast and then just move on with the scene. And yeah, it makes the scene a bit more entertaining, a bit funnier, like one more good, funny joke. One more Damien being Damien thing in there, and then just get back to the exposition or whatever it is you had to do with this scene.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Can I hear your opinion of a joke that doesn't work in this movie?
I think Emily, did you have something to say?
No. Oh, no. Okay.
A joke that doesn't work? So I wanted to make sure. go for it, James.
No, I don't have one. I can't think of one on the top of my head, but.
I think I hate the ESPN joke.
Yeah, it's been done.
I think it's not funny. And I think the farting guy farting at the end after they move the desk, I don't find that particularly funny. And it's not just because I don't enjoy fart-related humor. But I those are two examples that come off the top of my head.
Right. Yeah. And the stop trying to make fetch happen, like that's just such a perfect formula for any joke. Like you just plug in anything you don't like where the word fetch is.
Exactly.
And like that's the internet. That's every meme ever. Like that's just so perfect for it.
Yeah.
I know that like I started following Daniel Franzese.
Franzese is what I went
it's
with.
So Italian. I started following him on Instagram and he posts the best fan art with all of his jokes that people make. Like people dressing up for him as Halloween, like for Halloween with the hoodie and the sunglasses. And like just the four for you Glen Coco jokes. Like he posts so much stuff about that. That's one of the things that I has made me love this movie even more, even though I've seen it 100 times and how could I love it anymore, is that so many of the actors that were in the movie now are very active on social media and they still talk about Mean Girls and get together with the other people that were in Mean Girls. Like I saw on Lacey Chabert's blog that she went to Danny's kickball league because they named the team the Gretchen Wieners and their logo on the t-shirts was a pop or a toaster strudel with Gretchen Wieners written on it. And that the fact that Lacey Chabert went to one of their games. God. To like, you know, show their respect that they made such a funny kickball name. It's so amazing. It's like everything that I want all of these people to still be doing instead of just being like, oh, Mean Girls, I guess I was in that movie.
Like, or saying they're sick of being asked about it or whatever. Like just
exactly.
Really it. Yeah, there's upwards of like 30 fake Regina George Twitter accounts today that I found.
Not enough. we'll make it hit a cool 40 before the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, and I guess we kind of made a passing joke to it earlier, but the White House, like the real White House Twitter account, took a picture of Bo, the Obama's dog, with the tennis ball in his mouth with the text, Bo, stop trying to make fetch happen.
Yeah.
And it got like 27,000 retweets and 17,000 favorites. And I mean, this is the government of one of the most powerful country in the world. Like if I just couldn't think of a better testament to how this movie's just lived on in pop culture, especially on the internet,
and
makes so happy.
Yeah. And another good presidential example is I can't remember if it was their Twitter account or their Tumblr account, but on October 3rd they tweeted something or Tumblr something along the lines of Happy Mean Girls Day, which is like a real deep cut, and I appreciated it.
Yeah. And the Mariah Carey single opens with a Mean Girls quote.
Yeah. I think like a couple months ago she was on some MTV talk show or something like that, and basically acted out a scene from Mean Girls with Nick Cannon. It was so bizarre.
That's lovely.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I need to see that.
Did I not send that to you, Emily?
No, you did
it
not.
It is weird.
Oh my God.
That sounds like fanfic Emily wrote. How did she not know about this yet?
Well, and there's a Mariah Carey poster in this movie, which I enjoy, but she's always been a very vocal fan of this movie. And yeah, it's funny to me.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And just the amount of people who I hear saying, boo, you whore, which is a pretty awful thing to say, especially in passing.
That's the thing. And that, I love saying that to people, but I have to be really confident with who I'm talking to. That's not one of the references like fetch that I'll just throw out there and see if they get it.
Yeah. No, that's not like a litmus test quote. Yeah. That's a might get charged with a hate crime.
On a first date, say boo, you whore, because they chose a poor drink or something. I feel like that wouldn't work out too well.
One way to find out.
I will not be the one finding out.
While searching the internet and enjoying so much of the Mean Girl stuff that there is out there on that lovely internet, I saw an idea for the sequel of Mean Girl, like another Mean Girl sequel. Okay. It's Meryl Streep, Judi Dench, Jessica Walter, and Helen Mirren out of retirement home.
I would love that.
I would love that so much.
Yeah.
Jessica Walter would be perfect.
Yeah, of course. We've seen lots of evidence that she can play that type.
Horrible person type.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
I hope that Tina Fey is listening so that she can get on that.
I hope she didn't turn it off when I was criticizing her earlier.
I think we've all kind of criticized her at some point, but I feel like she can take some criticism.
I just worry about her patriarchal response to the MacGuffin Men's criticism of her.
Fair enough.
Anything else, you xylocarps? Honestly, the rest of my notes are just things I like from this movie. I have no
exactly,
further questions.
It's just the same thing. I think once we all start a bar called PJ Calamities, I think that's the real that will be the real Mean Girls accomplishment.
I know. I've been erasing all the notes that I've already referenced as I ask questions, and all I have left is like, Anthony, do you even go to this school?
Yeah.
No more illuminating questions for you guys.
This is the part where we just take turns saying the movie.
We should have sent each other scripts and figured out who we were all playing. Just gone through the whole thing. Anyway, thank you for listening. Be sure to check out our podcast next week. We don't know what we're talking about yet, but I bet it will be good. Emily, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for your decade of research for this, for this episode. And same to you, James. And again, thank you for listening. Check back next week.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.